The daddy-o of the radio, the boss man, your platter pushing papa, Pork the Torque, Porky Chadwick, Ched the sick head. No, not George Washington, it's Pork Torkington. No, not John Wayne, it's Pork the insane. More jams and smuckers, more moves than Dr. J.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. That's a song called Porkology by Bill Price and the Keystone Rhythm Band, and featuring, of course, the local radio legend Porky Chedwick, the legendary daddy-o of the radio and the boss man, as well as your platter pushing papa, died Sunday morning of cardiac arrest. He was 96 years old, which seems to prove that rock and roll keeps you young. His career as a groundbreaking disc jockey spanned well over half a century and included music by black artists, introducing music by black artists to young white radio listeners, the beginnings of rock and roll. In 1948, Mr. Chedwick joined WHOD in Homestead, which later became the ultra-hip WAMO, or WAMO. I'm joined now in Studio A by Travis Klein. He's a lifelong Pittsburgh music insider, record producer, and retailer, owner of Itzy Records, and one of the organizers of the Pittsburgh Music Hall of Fame. Travis Klein, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks, Paul. Nice to meet you.
Take us into the 1940s and what was happening on radio when Porky Chedwick came onto the scene and changed everything.
I'm not so sure that I could take you back to that. My experience started probably around 1950 with him. He went on the air in 48. My dad started selling records on Logan Street in the Hill in 1946. And what did he sell? Blues and gospel and jazz. So that's what I grew up listening to. But more importantly, the people that we associated with were the black disc jockeys. And for that matter, the people who owned the great independent labels, Atlantic, King, Excello, the great R&B labels that that were the basis for rock and roll. And so those were my heroes. Porky was a hero, but so was Sir Walter and the others. And
and you could go to clubs and you could hear this music.
If you remember the scene in Animal House where the white kids went to the black club,
mm-hmm.
there was a place up on Wiley Avenue called Mutt's Hut that had the same type of atmosphere, except there was never – back then it was okay. It was okay for white kids to be there. Because the Hill was still mixed. At least there was the leftover from when the Hills were Jews and Italians and Syrians and blacks all mixed. And that really represented what Pittsburgh was. Pittsburgh made Porky. Porky made Pittsburgh. Those were the two things that were consistent throughout all the years.
But what made Porky different, what made him stand out, was that he started taking some of these records that you loved, that he loved, that featured black artists. And in the early days, you had people like Bo Diddley, for example, who might not have gotten airplay if it wasn't for Porky. Just describe what he did. How did he end up getting these records on the radio?
Okay. He what he did that was so different than anybody else is in the mid-50s, 54, 55, 56, there were other white DJs around the country, Alan Freed, Hound Dog Lorenz, Wolfman Jack, Hunter Hancock, around the country. Then they were white guys playing records for black music for white kids. The difference between him and all the others was he was the first to play old records. And more importantly, what most of the guys who played rhythm and blues were playing were groups, almost strictly group harmony records. The harp tones, the spaniels, the dells, and so forth. And what he did that made us different, us as a city musically, was in addition to playing the groups, he played solo artists, he played duets, he played, which doesn't sound like much in itself, but it was a big step away from what all the New Yorkers were doing, for instance. And he also played sax, blowing horn records, jump blues. He played gospel records, played spirituals. And Jimmy Reed, the blues artist, was as familiar to Pittsburgh kids as Elvis Presley was to the squares around the country. This was a guy who Porky played what he loved, and then we loved what he played. That's really this nutshell.
So he introduced a generation of younger people, including a lot of white kids who wouldn't have been exposed to the music otherwise, to some traditional black gospel rhythm and blues, but then eventually what would evolve into rock and roll.
Yeah. When it became more solo artists, Chuck Berry, Little Richard, people like that, and Bo.
James Brown.
And James. That's when it became rock and roll, because the groups almost got left behind. With the Italians in New York started calling doo-wop. We never called doo-wop in Pittsburgh. It's an abomination to Pittsburghers. It was rhythm and blues then. It's always been rhythm and blues, the same name that the black folks called it. But the thing that I found interesting was, I remember asking a friend of mine, he's probably in the mid-80s now. I said, did you listen to Porky in the 50s too? He said, sure. You know, it wasn't like they listened to Bill Powell and Sir Walter and then turned it off when Porky came on. He was just another disc jockey playing records. But one of the things that I read in Adrian McCoy's article today reminded me that a lot of the records that he played were only played by him, number one, but more importantly, because of what my dad was doing, he put those records on jukeboxes. We sold to almost every black jukebox operator or every location that had black records. And so we were able to put records on boxes, blues records that would never be on the radio, things that were just not made for pop music. Something that that he doesn't get credit for, and that's that Alan Freeborn in Johnstown first went on radio in Newcastle. He listened to Porky growing up. Dick Clark, before he went on the air in Philadelphia, came to Pittsburgh, stayed for 3 days, listened to Pittsburgh radio. Who did he listen to?
Porky Chadwick.
Porky Chadwick and J. Michael and Barry Kay, who both came after Porky. So whatever bit of black music became part of the white world, he influenced. The reemergence of the rock and roll revival era of the 70s started by Richard Nader in New York. Richard was from Masontown, which is right next to Uniontown.
So Porky Chadwick influenced all of these nationally known DJs, record show hosts like Dick Clark, who took, of course, famously Bandstand to Philadelphia, and then when it went national on ABC, American Bandstand. But you're saying that Porky Chadwick is the guy that started it all, and a lot of the people that came after him were imitating his style.
If as much as they could, because again, what separated him was, I had this realization a couple of years ago. The one thing about Porky, even at age 93, 94, 95, once you put a mic in his hand, he was just like he was a younger man again. He was born to be a disc jockey. It was something that came so naturally to him. But more importantly for me as somebody who learned to love this guy, and I miss him badly already, Porky was able to do something most humans can't, and that's live in their own skin. He was able to carry the weight of being a legend for the last 50 years of his life, maybe 60. That's pretty heavy.
And he is – it is very heavy. He is someone who is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland. He is someone who all of the legendary artists like Bo Diddley, James Brown, credited for helping their music become as popular as it did. I mean, you see all these pictures in on the internet and in the newspaper of Porky Chadwick with these people. They really respected him. But you touched on something earlier that I was going to ask you about, Travis, and that was the style of Porky Chadwick. And what you're saying is he pretty much was himself on the radio.
Absolutely. Obviously, he was the first to rap on the radio. Okay, there was nobody who did what he did. And I've never heard anybody who could do that. The rhymes that he made up were so absolutely unique. They'd be unique now. Back then, they called them personality jocks, people who got paid because they were different than the other disc jockeys. And in the 60s, as corporations took over, things became vanilla. And but in Pittsburgh, we were 5 years ahead of the rest of the country in buying, having black records played on white radio, on KQV, 5 years as far as Motown was going. Pittsburgh was the only city, Detroit, Cleveland, Boston, New York, Philadelphia, D.C., all these cities, white kids bought white records, black kids bought black records. But for 10 years prior to that, that wasn't the case at all. We went to G.C. Murphy's. We went to wherever the records were. And that's all that was.
And so it's something where Pittsburgh was ahead of the curve, and it was Porky Chadwick leading the charge in many ways.
Exactly. I brought this article. I don't know if you ever saw it. Might have been out of town. But this is the what they call the next page in the Post-Gazette. And they have something here.
This is holding a yellowed, peeling piece of the Sunday paper from several years ago. But, yeah, it's an entire page dedicated to Porky Chadwick. And the top of it is shaped like a giant record, and Porky's picture is in the middle. You know, there's a. I also saw a picture of him where from the 50s, where there are a bunch of kids, and this is early 50s,
yeah,
before rock and roll really took hold. But the kids gravitated to him. What was it about the hold that Porky Chadwick had on younger listeners?
Okay, I believe that I believe the leader has to be willing to be a martyr. Otherwise, they're not really a leader; they're a follower. And with that, he's one of few. John Hines was that type of person. Nate Smith was that type of person. But Porky was also. And so he had the purity and honesty of a child till the day he died. He never said a bad word about anybody. The fact that he didn't drink and didn't smoke, okay, you could say, well, that's maybe just a fake, a quirk. But he was a very spiritual, not religious person. That's just the way he was. Some people get born that way. I don't know that you can develop into that. The point of this article was that Don Early, who was a Homestead High grad in 1955, sang with a group called the Sabres, had been advised by Porky, don't wait to go to college. Go to college now. Do it now, because the streets will always be there for you. And so that's why he wrote this, "Dear Porky, thank you for changing my life." And he did that to a lot of people. There was this was a city that through Wiz Khalifa and Mac and to Christina to back into the 60s and 70s.
Christina Aguilera.
Right, who were influenced by what he did with us, okay? If you've ever seen Christina perform, it's a man's world. Okay, there's not too many chicks out there, white or black, that could do that. And she had been introduced to some black singers, Walt Maddox among others, who were able to help her. She had something in herself, obviously the voice and the inclination. And so,
talking about the effect that the legacy of Porky Chadwick, the legendary Pittsburgh disc jockey who died on Sunday at the age of 96. We've been remembering his life with Travis Klein, a lifelong Pittsburgh music insider and record producer who was a good friend of Porky Chadwick's, who is a member now of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Travis Klein, thank you for joining us to help us remember Porky Chadwick. We appreciate it.
Thanks. I love talking about him.
We take you into the break with more Porkology by Bill Price and the Keystone Rhythm Band. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.
And I'm cooking with those puss, your group potentate, who can motivate and articulate. The only pork that's kosher. You don't need gin to tune me in. I have enough soul to fill the Super Bowl.